I'd like to welcome you to the Dave Congleton Show. This is Matt Hoy sitting in for Dave. Dave is back in New York City for the family wedding. Today we've got on for our first hour Dr. Roy Spencer. Dr. Roy Spencer was a senior scientist for climate studies at NASA's Marshall Space Flight Center, where he and Dr. John Christie received NASA's Exceptional Scientific Achievement Medal for their global temperature monitoring work with satellites. He's now a principal research scientist at the University of Alabama in Huntsville and a policy advisor to the Heartland Institute. Dr. Spencer, thank you for joining us.
Hey, Matt. Good to be with you.
So you've got a new e-book out. It's available, at the very least, on Kindle. Is it available anywhere else?
Mostly on Kindle, yes. It's also available for free if you make a donation to the Cornwall Alliance.
Okay. And the title of that book is Inevitable Disaster, Why Hurricanes Can't Be Blamed on Global Warming. So
yes, that's the second book. Yeah, I thought you were talking about my first one, which came out a month before that, called An Inconvenient Deception, which is an answer to Al Gore's most recent movie.
Okay, well, we'll get to that one a little bit later. Let's start with the hurricanes. So Houston got hit by Harvey, and then Florida got hit by Irma. And now Puerto Rico's been hit by Maria. These aren't evidence of global warming?
No. Where the hurricanes hit is kind of irrelevant. I mean, there's nothing about global warming theory that suggests there will be more landfalling hurricanes. You have to look at all of the activity taken as a whole. There's a lot of year-to-year variability in hurricane activity. And that is true. You have to look at the long-term statistics. 1 year does not constitute a trend. And when you look at the long-term statistics, what you find is, for instance, for Florida, that if anything, in the last 100 years, there has been a decrease in major landfalling hurricanes in Florida. And then as far as Texas goes, we've had quite a few Category 4 hurricanes hit over the years. And again, there's no long-term trend.
Okay. If you've got questions for Dr. Spencer, you're welcome to call in. The phone number here is 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. So I heard a lot, especially, I think, from people like Neil deGrasse Tyson, that because we kind of predicted that these hurricanes were going to hit land, that proves that we know a lot about climate science. Do we know a lot about climate science?
No. The way I like to phrase it is that climate science isn't rocket science. It's actually much more difficult than that. And I can say that tongue-in-cheek because for 15 years I helped design satellite instruments for NASA. And am a principal investigator on one of them that's still flying on a satellite up there. No, Neil deGrasse Tyson made just an astoundingly naive comment about how, science predicts the timing of the eclipse, the eclipse that we had in August, right?
Right.
And he said, therefore, you should believe all scientists on all matters, as if all science is created the same. And it's not. There's some areas of science where there are huge uncertainties, and climate science is one of those areas of science.
So you are kind of described as a climate science skeptic. Is that correct?
Yeah, or probably a more accurate description of me is I'm a lukewarmer. I believe that the CO2 that we're putting in the atmosphere from fossil fuel burning is causing at least some of the warming that we've seen recently. We have evidence that some of the warming we've seen in recent decades is natural. It's likely from a theoretical standpoint that probably half of it or maybe more is due to increasing carbon dioxide. But in any event, the warming is still only progressing at half the rate that the climate models predict. So that's why I'm called a lukewarmer, is that I don't think global warming is any kind of imminent catastrophe. I don't think it's a long-term catastrophe. I think the predictions of warming that have been put out there for decades now are incorrect by at least a factor of two. and that it's not going to be nearly the problem that it's predicted to be by some people that, you know, have very loud voices.
I keep hearing, it seems like every year that this latest year was the hottest year on record. Is that? Go ahead.
Well, there's probably some truth to that. When the climate system changes very slowly, because the heat carrying capacity of the oceans is so massive. So once the oceans warm up, they stay warm. You know, they are going to cool off in any short period of time. So once you are into a warm period like we are now, you can expect that we will continue to have warmth, you know, for years, if not decades to come. Now we can get into, you know, how well can we measure these temperatures? Because these records that are being set are only by hundredths of a degree. I mean, they're much less than anybody could ever feel. In fact, the average global warming rate is less than probably most of us would ever be able to discern in our lifetime. It's about 0.2 degrees C per decade is all, which is, you know, people are not going to notice it. What we notice is huge swings in weather. Well, I guess unless you live on the California coast.
Yeah.
But
occasionally we have a warm summer and a cold summer.
Sure. Most of us, you know, experience pretty large swings of temperature, and we're not going to notice, you know, half a degree or a degree over 30 years or 40 years.
What if the climate models were right and we got, what are they predicting, between 2 and 4 degrees Celsius by year 2100?
Yeah, something like that.
If they're right, what does you're in Huntsville, Alabama? How does Huntsville, Alabama, look different, 2 to 4 degrees warmer?
Probably not a lot different. It would depend a lot on whether precipitation changes. You could ask the same thing about the Midwest, and in fact, I know a little more about the Midwest because I actually do consulting for corn growing interests in the Midwest.
Okay.
So I've been tracking what the Corn Belt has been doing, and these climate models have predicted that the Corn Belt should be warming fairly rapidly, and it hasn't happened. They're off by about a factor of 3. You know, there's been a slight amount of warming. Precipitation, if anything, has gone up in the Corn Belt for the long term, say over the last 100 years.
Mm-hmm.
So far, there's really nothing showing up to worry about. So, you know, I'm not going to worry about it until it starts showing up.
Mm-hmm.
And so far, it hasn't. I mean, we've been having these forecasts now for over 20 years, more like 30 years, okay? And the forecasts are not panning out.
So you talked a little bit about the Corn Belt in the Middle America. Out here on the California coast, we had last year a very weak, if any, El Nino, and yet we had some record-breaking rains we haven't seen here since, I'm thinking, at least the mid-90s. And usually, to get that much rain, we have to have a really strong El Nino.
Right.
Do you have any idea kind of how we ended up with what we had last year?
Yes. The reason why you usually get heavier rains with El Nino is the tropics warm up. And it's not the warm tropics per se that gives California its wintertime storminess during an El Nino winter. It's the greater temperature contrast between the tropics and the middle latitudes that the warm tropics causes. Because that's what fuels mid-latitude weather systems, is a temperature contrast, okay?
Mm-hmm.
So what happened last winter is that rather than having the warm tropics providing the temperature contrast, it was a cold pool of water in the northeastern Pacific Ocean.
Mm.
You know, the northeastern Pacific had cooled off well below average, and that caused a cool, you know, a cool blob that persisted for a long time. It cooled the air masses that were coming across the Pacific, and it set up this, again, a temperature contrast between the mid-latitudes and the tropics. But the contrast wasn't because of the warm tropics. It was because of a cool mid-latitude. Either one will give you the storms, which then slam into California.
We're talking with Dr. Roy Spencer of the University of Alabama at Huntsville here on 920 News Talk 920 KVEC. We'll be right back. Invite your calls at 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. Welcome back to the Dave Congleton Show. Matt Hoy sitting in for Dave Congleton here at News Talk 920 KVEC. We'll be taking your calls shortly, 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832 for Dr. Roy Spencer of the University of Alabama at Huntsville. We got a call from Paul in St. Louis. Paul, thanks for calling the show.
Hello. Hey, hello, doctor. Hey, I got a question for Paul. You because... You know, I've seen global warming with my own eyes. I've been to Alaska, and everybody up there says the glaciers are shrinking. There's a whole village that's up there that they're moving away from the ocean because the ice pack and the tundra is getting smaller and the ocean's rising. I've been to Colorado up in the Rockies and seen thousands of acres of pine trees dying because they said that it doesn't get cold enough in the winter to kill off the bark beetle. Even here in our own county, they're moving a whole highway inland about a half a mile because the ocean is beginning to eat it away, and that road's been there for 80 years, but now the ocean is starting to rise and endangering the road, so they're moving it. So my question to you, they've been predicting that the climate was warming up and all these things were going to happen. I mean, all these things that I just described were predicted that they were going to happen back in the 80s. So were they just lucky? Was that just a lucky guess?
To some extent, I would say yes. We have proxy temperature measurements for the last 2,000 years, which suggests that virtually every century over the last 2,000 years, temperatures have either been rising or falling. Okay, let's take some of the points that you made. The retreating glaciers in Alaska, for instance, they are revealing ancient tree stumps that have been carbon dated to 1 to 2,000 years old, which correspond to the middle, the medieval warm period and the Roman warm period. What caused it to be warm back then? Rising sea level. Yes, sea level has been rising for as long as we've been measuring it, which is basically the mid-1800s. And the rate of rise has been about 1 inch per decade. Clearly, that rise was occurring before humans could ever be blamed. And it continues to rise at the same rate. So climate change does indeed happen. It has gotten warmer. The question is, how much is human caused versus natural? Most scientists are just assuming it's human caused because they have no other explanation. The trouble is that the climate system, like weather, is a nonlinear dynamical system. The ocean currents are a nonlinear dynamical system. They can go through changes all by themselves, which can change the climate system by a little bit, on a time scale of hundreds of years to millennia. So we really don't know what causes these changes to occur, but we know they occur. I mean, how else do you explain that there used to be forests where there are now glaciers in Alaska, but now they're receding? But you mentioned the village in Alaska. That's the Kevalina Village. Those people moved out on a barrier island.
Hello?
Back in the 1970s. And they were advised against it because those barrier islands are unstable. And it's just not, you know, it's not good to live that close to the ocean. And now, you know, they're finding that coastlines change over time, especially if there's a strong slope next to the coast. Eventually, that's going to erode away. I live on the side of a slope, and over decades and centuries, the slope moves.
Well, you know, you say that this is nonlinear, and I disagree with you, because I can guarantee you if you take an enclosed ecosystem, you increase the carbon dioxide inside that ecosystem, the temperature is going to rise.
Paul, thanks for the call. Dr. Spencer, we aren't in a closed ecosystem, are we?
Well, yes, that's true. And I agree with the caller that if you add CO2, that the temperature will go up. But if the caller was listening earlier, I admitted that the theory behind global warming is actually very good, that if you add CO2 to the system, the temperature in the lower atmosphere and the surface should go up. The temperature in the upper atmosphere should go down. And I believe that, okay, based on the theory. And the trouble is when you go into the details of exactly how much, that becomes much more uncertain. And then you pile on top the uncertainty of how much warming in recent decades, which is when most of the warming has occurred, how much of that is natural. We have published research that suggests that more frequent or stronger El Niños since the late 1970s was responsible for about half of the global warming that we've seen. So I don't deny that more CO2 causes warming. What I deny is that we have any confidence in how much of the warming is due to humans. And then going beyond that, what can we even do about it anyway, to the extent that part of it is our fault? That's a whole other issue that we could get into.
We got we've got more callers for you, Dr. Spencer, when we come back from a break. This is News Talk 920 KVEC. Go ahead and give us a call, 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. We'd love to hear from you. Playing some old Weird Al hit. No, that's the original, but
yeah, the Knack.
The Knack. Okay.
What was My Bologna? Was the
yes, that was
Weird
the
Al.
Weird Al one. Yes, the Cal Poly's most famous graduate here in San Luis Obispo. It's Matt Hoy here, sitting in for Dave Congleton on the Dave Congleton Show here at News Talk 920 KVEC. We're talking with Dr. Roy Spencer, who's got a couple of new ebooks out. Inevitable Disaster, Why Hurricanes Can't Be Blamed on Global Warming, and An Inconvenient Deception, How Al Gore Distorts Climate Science and Energy Policy. We welcome your calls here, 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. We're working without a producer today because Dave's gone, so if you call in, we're going to put you right on hold. Just hold on. We will get to your call. So, got a call for Dr. Roy Spencer. Go ahead, state your name and where you're from.
This is Matt. It's from San Luis Obispo.
Hi, Matt.
Hi, Matt and Royce, I believe. I appreciate the discussion. I haven't heard a lot of it, but the topic interested me. I just turned the radio on and it interested me greatly. So I wanted to make a couple of points. My understanding is that the carbon dioxide is not what increases the temperature. It's the other way around, that the temperature increase through the times has actually increased the carbon dioxide in our atmosphere. That's been shown by scientific studies. So we got it backwards. The other comment I wanted to make is that without ice ages, and just about 40 years ago, the danger we were facing, according to the scientists who now say we have global warming, were the same ones that said we have the soon-to-happening ice age, and everybody was worried about that. And then I have a question. What's so bad about increased temperature for a while? Our crops grow at the northern latitudes, so we have much better crop growth. So there's nothing bad about it. this whole thing is absolutely political hype by the left, because that's the only way they can try to destroy a good economy that has been built up, because the communist or the leftist, the liberal economy, hasn't worked. So they have to try to destroy the good science-based economy that we have now. Those are my points. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Dr. Spencer, would you like to kind of tackle that?
Okay, well, his first point had to do with the fact that the ice core record in Antarctica shows that over hundreds of thousands of years, you know, they infer from the ice core what the carbon dioxide concentrations were and what the temperatures were. And if we can believe those estimates from the ice cores, what he's saying is correct, is that it looks like in the ice core record, the temperature changes came first and then the carbon dioxide changes came. And, you know, that would probably make sense because, you know, the carbon budget of the Earth depends a lot on life on Earth. Okay. It depends on how much life there is, how much stuff there is growing. So it seems to make sense that if the temperatures were to change due to something, that then the CO2 would change. So his point is often brought up by skeptics or, you know, people like myself. I'm kind of ambivalent on that. I don't think we really understand what was going on in the ice core record. Yes, it's true. His second point. Yes, it's true that in the 1970s, the big scare was the coming ice age. And it is sort of a good point that it seems like whenever we see something happening over 10 or 20 years, we start worrying that it's going to be a long-term trend. And then that changed into, oh, now it's warming, so it must be CO2. Well, you know, I understand the caller's concern. I personally believe that it will continue to warm irregularly, just at not the rate that they're predicting, because I do believe CO2 is a greenhouse gas. And then let's get to his final point, which is some warming necessarily bad? From everything I've seen, I would say, generally speaking, no. We already have observations from the last 30 years that show there has been a global greening, especially in semi-arid areas of the Earth. Just about every place is greening, especially right around the periphery of desert areas, say in the Sahara and the Middle East. More CO2 is good for life on Earth. I mean, CO2 is necessary for photosynthesis. Photosynthesis is necessary for life to exist on Earth, because it's necessary for the beginning of the food chain on land and in the ocean. And the way it's been described to me by plant physiologists is that now the biosphere, the Earth's biosphere, is breathing more freely, that it has been sucking on, the biosphere has been in effect sucking on CO2 in the atmosphere as hard as it can for millennia. And it reached sort of this point where it couldn't suck any more out. So now that we're putting CO2 back into the atmosphere, as fast as we can generate it, half of it disappears. No matter how much we increase our CO2 emissions, decade after decade, year after year, nature gobbles up half of it. And like I said, we see this global greening. So I think this is a legitimate scientific debate to have, is it necessarily a bad thing that the temperatures go up a little bit and that there's more CO2 in the atmosphere? Now, some people will say, well, we shouldn't be fooling with the biosphere at all. And that's fine. If there was a way to generate the energy that humanity needs, you know, relatively inexpensively, you know, nearly as inexpensively as we can get from fossil fuels, I am all for alternative sources of energy. But what I am against is the fact that we know poverty kills. And if we force very expensive energy on masses, it's going to kill people. That is a real threat as opposed to a theoretical threat. So I'm concerned about the real threat. I do hope we come up with some, you know, with alternative energy sources, which are relatively inexpensive. We are not there yet. There's, you know, these claims that solar and wind are just as cheap. Those all depend on the fact that they are subsidized by federal and state governments.
We've got some more calls for Dr. Spencer. Go, so go ahead, state your name, where you're from.
Hey, it's Mark on the road. Thank you, Doc, for coming on. I really appreciate this very interesting point that you make on the environment. So let me get this correct. There has been periods of time of warming and cooling in the millennia, and that warming isn't necessarily bad, provides for effective growth of plant matter and crops, et cetera. Is that correct? Do I get that much out of it?
Yes, generally speaking, I would say that's true.
Okay. So thank you. And so therefore, I want to really drill down and ask you what the real effect on the sun has on our environment and our global temperatures, and how do sunspots and sun flares work as it relates to our environment?
Great question, Dr. Spencer.
Well, there is a subset of scientists out there that believe that a lot of climate change, or most of the climate change we see, is driven by variations in the sun. Now, if that is indeed happening, and I'm skeptical, I'm sort of skeptical of everything. if that is indeed happening, then it can't be through the direct amount of sunlight coming from the sun, because the 11-year sunspot cycle only causes a change in total sun output of one part in a thousand. And it really doesn't show up in other things very well. There's no convincing evidence that the sunspot cycle is causing a cycle in global temperatures or things like that. But, you know, there's other ways that people have looked at it, and you can play all kinds of statistical games, and they claim to find, you know, good correlations in some areas with certain weather parameters between, you know, sunspot cycles and weather. And like I said, I'm not convinced one way or the other. It's one of the variables. And the reason why that kind of stuff isn't put into the climate models is because it cannot be specified. There isn't a clear physical relationship there they can put in the climate model.
Thanks for the call.
CO2, increasing CO2 is something that can be put in the climate models fairly easily. I mean, we measure in the laboratory how CO2 affects the transfer of infrared radiation, which is basically what's involved in global warming theory. So that they can put in the models. But they can't put things in the models that we don't understand.
Okay. Again, thanks for the call. We've got a one more. Let's take one more quick call. We got a break coming up, so let's try and get one more call in before. Nope, we don't have one more that time. This is the Dave Congleton Show on 920 KVEC. We'll come back, we'll try and get some more questions for Dr. Spencer, and give us a call, 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. Welcome back to the Dave Congleton Show. This is Matt Hoy sitting in for Dave here at News Talk 920 KVEC. Phone number to call in is 543-8830 or 1-800-549-5832. Dr. Spencer, how can people find you on the internet?
I've been running a blog for quite a few years now. It's called drroyspencer.com, where I'd probably address just about every issue or question anybody can think of related to climate and climate change.
So let's get another call in for doctors. We don't have a call. Okay, then I will ask the questions. So when I was on the radio here with Dave Congleton a few weeks ago, we were talking about California's decision to expand its cap and trade program or extend it for another 10 years. What sorts of benefits do you think California and or the world are going to see from kind of that cap and trade system?
Well, probably none. We already know, because the calculations have been done, if you got rid of the United States entirely, if it just disappeared and the rest of the world continued on, you know, with business as usual, it would not produce a measurable impact on global temperatures by the end of the century. So clearly, if the U.S. doesn't have an impact, California doesn't have an impact. And it's because, you know, energy is necessary for everything humans do. For the time being, we're stuck with fossil fuels as the primary source of that energy. the Paris Agreement from 2015, you know, that supposedly, you know, we're going to really change things. People have looked at the details of what the different countries of the world have signed up for with that, and it will produce no measurable impact on global temperatures by the end of this century. The reason is the vast majority of the countries don't have to do anything different. The reason why the vast majority of the countries signed up for the Paris Agreement is because they were looking forward to huge transfers of wealth from a few wealthy countries. Even China and India have to do virtually nothing in the coming years. you know, people say, oh, but isn't China going big into solar? No, that's the impression they want to leave with you. They are completing a new coal-fired power plant in China approximately once every one plant every 1 to 2 weeks. They are continuing to expand their coal-fired electricity generation.
Okay.
So we're stuck. We're stuck with it for the time being. Nothing California does is going to make any difference.
Okay, we've got a caller. Go ahead, state your name and where you're from.
Yes, Rob in Lesosis.
Hi, Rob.
Hi, how you doing? You know, you should probably vet your guests a little bit better, or unless you just want to push your right-wing agenda, that's fine, too. But I'm reading a lot about your guest, and, I mean, he's in the pocket of big oil. I mean, this is... if you want to advance your agenda, that's fine, but at least have a contrary opinion on... That is actually based on real science.
Dr. Spencer, hold on one second. Dr. Spencer, how much money have you gotten from big oil over your career? None.
They've never offered to give me any big oil. But obviously, that's not true.
You're part of a group that is funded by big oil. I just read about it right here.
What group is that?
I mean, okay, forget all that.
What is the group? So you said what group is it?
You do agree that carbon dioxide contributes to global warming, right?
Yes.
Right? And you do agree that humans produce carbon dioxide?
Yes.
Okay, so why would we not want to limit that, even on the off chance that we're not contributing that much? We have the technology. I mean, the way that we burn fossil fuels is completely reckless.
Let me answer your question now that you've asked.
Go ahead. That's an excellent question. Go ahead and answer the question.
I think it's worth working on, okay? But I can give you an example, a counterexample. Do you agree that sometimes people die because they choke on food? Don't you think we should stop eating food because of the potential danger? No, but you can say people die from additives in food that are bad for you,
so we should stop using those, correct?
For the time being, fossil fuels are necessary for humanity, okay? There's no way around it.
Oh, I understand that, believe me. I understand that. But to say, well, there's nothing we can do, so we shouldn't do anything, that's a completely specious argument.
Hopefully you heard me say that I hope that we come up with alternative energy solutions. They are not here yet. You cannot mandate them into existence through legislative fiat.
Great. Well, wouldn't you agree that the U.S. should be at the forefront of trying to lead that technology rather than being the only country other than two other countries who left the Paris Accords? I mean, why would we not take a leadership role in that rather than just...
We are taking a leadership role, but it doesn't require the government mandating it. Since energy is required for everything we do, don't you think that the people who sell us energy are looking at alternative ways of producing energy, especially since...
Go ahead. Dr. Spencer, did we lose you? Thank you very much for the call. Did we lose Dr. Spencer?
We might have lost him.
I'm here.
Okay. Yeah, go ahead and finish your comment.
Well, you know, the caller is making points that I often hear that, you know, shouldn't we be doing something? And I think we actually are. I think private industry will be solving this problem. But mandating people using energy, which Germany has learned, is three times as expensive as fossil fuels, is just going to push those who are on the edge of poverty into poverty, and poverty kills. So I'm not against research into alternative forms of energy. I'm very much for it. I just think that it's going to happen anyway, because if there's one thing humanity needs, it's energy, and there are, and just allow the private sector to provide that energy.
They
will come up with the solutions.
The caller talked about the Paris Agreement and Donald Trump, I believe, is pulling us out of it. I think there were some reports that he may have been putting us back in, or who knows. But
yeah,
is the Paris Agreement about technology? Do we need to be in that to promote clean energy technologies?
No. No, we don't need to be in it. Like I said, you know, all the countries of the world need energy anyway. So they can, you know, each country can, you know, work on its own and see who comes up with the best solutions to this. You know, speaking of the Paris Accord, the modern godfather of global warming alarmism, for lack of a better term, is NASA's James Hansen. And he has said that Paris is a sham. It's a waste of time. It will not accomplish anything. You know, because he thinks it does not go nearly far enough.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But yeah, I think it has to do with whether you think you need one organizing multinational organization to get things done. And I spent enough time in government to know that, you know, the bigger the organization, typically the less efficient and the slower it is to get any kind of progress. I'm in favor of devolving these kinds of decisions to, you know, smaller and smaller scales, you know, to the local scale, to the state scale, to the scale of individual countries, and let them, you know, research it and figure it out and come together occasionally and compare notes. But no, I'm not in favor of the UN organizing this, because I've seen, you know, too much, you know, I've been around long enough to see too much bad come out of that organization.
Let me ask you this question. What evidence would you have to be provided with? What could Al Gore and James Hansen and Michael Mann present to you that would get you to change your mind? What sort of scientific evidence could they bring to you and say, Dr. Spencer, look, here's what we've got?
I would have to be told what it is that I believe that they don't believe. Okay, if we're talking about Al Gore's belief that sea level is going to rise by 20 or 50 feet, you know, by the end of the century, then I'd have to say, well, I'd have to see sea level rise accelerating. And it hasn't. We have tide gauge measurements since the 1850s, and it shows just a gradual rise. It's been rising the same as before, you know, before we were producing CO2 and after we were producing CO2. So we would have to have decades of things changing differently than they are now. You know, we just had a huge hurricane hit Puerto Rico, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Except it wasn't as bad as a hurricane that hit Puerto Rico in 1928, which was stronger and caused much more death, 10 times the deaths. What caused that? And before that, in like 20-year period, there were two other Category 4 hurricanes that struck Puerto Rico. You know, people think that this is something new. It's not. It's happened before for as long as we know. So I would have to answer your question, I would have to see nature behaving in ways that we've never seen before. And so far, everything that we're observing, we've seen before. Okay?
We've got about a minute left. What's your final thoughts on this? Is there any common ground between, you know, lukewarmers such as yourself and you know, people like Al Gore? I guess that probably the threats to throw people like you in jail don't help a whole lot. But is there anything that we can do?
I think we're doing. Are you talking about in the public discourse?
Yes.
To bring people together?
Yeah.
Well, it does seem like that the subject is very polarized. There seems to be two schools of thought out there. One is that global warming is a coming Armageddon that's going to destroy us all if we don't do something. The other extreme, people who think that it's all a big hoax, and I think we had, you know, one caller that called in.
We're running out of time. Thank you very much for your time, Dr. Spencer. You can find him at drroyspencer.com and find his books on Amazon.